Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films, Week 12 edition. Of course, on this episode, Thanksgiving will soon be upon us, so we're going to have Greg break down personnel groupings and formations based on what Thanksgiving side dish they best align with. I hope you brought your notes, Greg, because I'm going to quiz you.
Yeah, you know. You know, funny, I actually got on the scale the other day, and I'm doing okay, and I said, you know what? This is not the good week to really decide, you know, how you're going to go about your dietary habits going forward, you know.
There's zero reason to have a scale involved in your life, really, really, once it starts to get cold. You know, you can worry about that once it gets beach season and Greg's going to be hot to trot. But in the meantime.
Yeah, sure.
In the meantime, we won't worry about scales. What I am worried about, though, Greg, is the local professional football team. And I think that there are some stuff that it was an inevitability that they would have one of these, miscues. You know, I think in a perfect world, it wouldn't come against a 1-8 team, but I mean, Greg, this offense, it looked better, but the interceptions were damning. And as you pointed out before we went to air, they've got some real issues.
Yeah. And I think we spoke last week and speaking about the Titans, but just in general, I think I made the point to you that when a team has a particular flaws or weaknesses, they can crop up in any given game against any given opponent.
Yep.
And obviously to the outsider, it looks like, oh my God, how could they lose to the Texans? And maybe that's fair, but this is a team that's really struggled on offense since they lost Derrick Henry. Think of it this way. In their last three games, Buck, they've had three pass completions of 20 plus yards, in three games. One was a screen to Dante Foreman. Another was that throw last week to Marcus Johnson. That was a 5-yard slant that he had run after catch. The third one was this week when I believe the coverage busted and they hit Westbrook Heaney, you know, on the seam ball. You probably remember that play.
Yeah.
But other than that, they have zero explosive plays, 20-plus yard pass plays. This offense is very condensed. They can't run it. I mean, they had some moments where the run game looked okay this week. Clearly, Hilliard was their best-looking back, and that's obviously the reason that they cut Adrian Peterson, besides the fact that he didn't look very good. But this team is really struggling on the offensive side of the ball, and it's very difficult to play offense in this league, no matter what kind of personnel you have, no matter what, if you cannot create any explosive pass plays.
Yeah. I mean, they just don't have it to them right now. And when they come, as you mentioned, they're basically catch and runs or screen passes at this point. This is the wrong opponent to go up against to New England this weekend and have difficulties on offense, because the Patriots, their quarterback is executing what he's being asked to do, and he's being super efficient. But the real story of this team and how it's kind of gotten themselves back on track is how well that defense is playing right now.
I think there's two stories. Believe it or not, everybody speaks about Mac Jones for obvious reasons. He's the quarterback, and you hit it right on the head. He's executing at a very high level what he's being asked to do. But offensively, they're a running football team, Buck,
yes,
and no one talks about that. They're among the league leaders in rushing attempts, and obviously with a quarterback that's not part of the run game. Harris and Stevenson have combined for 210 carries. They've rushed for 120 or more yards in seven consecutive games. This is a running football team, and it's old school. They line up with Jones under center and they hand it off. It's not the shotgun stuff. It's not, you know, it's not the cool stuff. You know, it's none of that stuff. It's let's put the quarterback under center. Let's hand the ball off. Let's be physical and let's run the ball. So offensively, to me, that's been overlooked by a lot of the media narratives because of Jones. And Jones is playing very well. That there's no argument there. But this is a running football team. This is an old school team overall. Run the ball, play really good defense, and have your quarterback execute. Because they don't get a ton of big plays either on offense. They get enough, but they don't get a ton. But you're right about their defense. Their defense is very, very good, and it's different because they don't really play base defense. They play big nickel, meaning they play with three safeties as sort of their foundation base defense. And two of those safeties, Kyle Duggar and Adrian Phillips, essentially play like linebackers, mm-hmm. and they're really good players, really overlooked, you know, media wise, but clearly, you know, teams in the league who study their defense are not overlooking them. They're really good players and they're critical to what they do defensively.
Yeah. And certainly this Titans offense isn't in a position to overlook anybody. And certainly no. Mike Vrabel will be drawing attention to all of those things that you've just pointed out. Greg, before we get into this in a little more detail, the Patriots defense, not only are they playing well as a unit, but they're turning the ball over at an exceptional rate in this five-game win streak that they have. Ryan Tannehill's interceptions were obviously the thing that most killed the Titans on Sunday. Not alone killed them, but certainly made it a lot harder to win a football game when you've got your quarterback throwing four of them. Now, some of them, you know, I looked at the last one and just kind of discounted it because it's clear that he was pressing and the weather conditions were starting to make it difficult. They shouldn't be throwing the ball 52 times in a game like that anyway. But I think the interception that really killed them was the third one, where there was clearly a miscommunication between Ryan Tannehill and the rookie wide receiver Des Fitzpatrick. And I'm wondering what your observations were on that specific play.
Actually, if I could, I'd be really curious, because I know Ryan Tannehill tends to be fairly open about these things. Did he talk about any of these interceptions?
You know, this is the first time that he's really not expanded. I don't think he wanted to sell Fitzpatrick out.
Well, because the interception that I thought was most surprising, I'll use that word, was the Grugier-Hill interception on 3rd and 6 on the final play of the first quarter. And you know the one I'm speaking about.
A.J. Brown was the intended, yeah.
Yes. And the reason I asked if he spoke about it, and obviously he did not, is because I was just surprised that he did not account for Grugier-Hill on that throw, because I don't know where he thought Grugier-Hill was going to be other than right there.
Yeah.
And I'm not laughing because I'm smarter than, you know, it was just one of those things. When I saw the play, I thought, how did he not see him? How did he not know that he was there? And that one actually was a killer as well, because that was into the red zone. And that was early in the game when the game was clearly a game. But anyway, getting to the one you're speaking about, I don't have any brilliant answer other than the fact that it was clear that whatever Fitzpatrick did was not what Brian Tannehill thought was going to happen. So I don't have any brilliant answer for that, to be honest with you.
Sure. And there may not be anything necessarily brilliant to it for exactly like that first interception that you pointed out, because we went through each of them with him and he goes, no, they didn't fool me. I just made a mistake. It's like he completely did not account for the linebacker sitting there waiting for him to let that one go.
And I thought the King interception as well, which was the one right before the last one, you know, when theoretically they still had a chance.
Yeah.
That was another one where I thought, just watching the tape, I did not think he recognized the pressure, and therefore he did not pick up his drop tempo and his reading speed. And to me, it just looked like he was, you know, thought he was totally protected and was going to make, you know, pretty much a normal throw. And of course, he got hit by Grugier-Hill pretty much right as he delivered, and the throw was off target. But it was a tough game. They do not want to throw it 50 plus times, clearly. They've got a lot to figure out. But the other issue is, and I don't know what's going to happen this week in terms of injuries, maybe you know more, but as you know, the three receivers who played the most snaps were Fitzpatrick, 64 snaps, Rodgers, 56 snaps, and Westbrook-Ikhine, 54 snaps. You know, Johnson hurt his hamstring after 14 snaps, and Brown only played 42 snaps. So you're playing with three wide receivers that you really don't want to be playing with. And again, there's no excuses in football. You got to line up and play with who's out there, but clearly that's not what the plan is.
Well, and just to kind of update the audience, Marcus Johnson has since been placed on injured reserve as part of their mass transactions yesterday, and A.J. Brown did not practice today. I think that they're going to try and see how far they can get him this week, and it's possible that if he can't go, they'll shut him down at the end of the week. His situation has been tough.
It's a shame because in some ways it's been a little bit of a lost year for AJ Brown up to this point. And obviously Julio Jones has not really played meaningful time. So it could be the same receiver group playing against the Patriots.
Oh, they got Golden Tate, baby. They're about to run the table with Golden Tate off the couch from down the road in Hendersonville here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I believe he's grew up in the area, did he not?
He's a local product for sure and has had a great career, but we have no idea what he's going to be at this point
on
their practice squad. So to kind of go back to the Patriots defense, Greg, I talked to Coach Mac about this today since we moved everything up on the short week and Mac and I did our segment today.
What did he say? Because he's a lot smarter than I am when it comes to defense.
Well, and I wanted to kind of give you his analysis and kind of expand that if we could, if possible. Basically, that what the Patriots are is not an overly complex defense. It's just what they're asked to do. They execute to a T, and that allows the whole unit to flourish. Obviously, they've got improved horsepower up front, but he didn't indicate that they're doing a lot to confuse quarterbacks or offensive coordinators at this point in their season.
And I would say he's right. He obviously knows more than I do, but I would say this. I would say that normally the Belichick approach has been what you'd call front multiplicity and versatility and coverage consistency. So they don't do a lot on the back end necessarily, but I will say this. This year, particularly in the recent weeks, they've played more zone than they normally do. And I think while you wouldn't say they have strongly defined coverage tendencies, they will play more cover one, that's man coverage out of dime, especially on third down, and you'll likely see them play more cover three, which is zone, out of nickel on first and second down. That's kind of been the way they've evolved this year. Now, what's happened up front, where they are more multiple with their alignments, is they're starting to get really good play from the rookie Christian Barmore from Alabama. He's starting to show the inside pass rush ability to win one-on-one versus guards at centers. And centers, they've gotten some really good play from Godshaw, both in the run game and at times as a pass rusher. And they've got a lot of players. This is the thing, a lot of players, Van Noy, Hightower, who can line up in multiple spots and be effective in all those positions. So, you know, and obviously that's a staple of Bill Belichick's, the kind of players he wants, Buck. He gets smart players who can do a lot of different things effectively.
Yeah, and I know it makes all the difference in the world to have a lot of those guys back after so many people on that side of the ball for the Patriots opted out in 2020. With this game, Greg, I understand that Mac Jones is, as we talked about, executing at a high level, and that this offense is run based and does so effectively, not necessarily through explosive plays. But as far as passing concepts go, what we saw from this Titans team while they were winning six games in a row is they were able to consistently get pressure on the quarterback. They did well in this last game against the Texans, but Tyrod was getting rid of the ball so quickly that it wasn't allowing the rush to get home. Is there, understanding that the players are different, how much of that will be implemented into Josh McDaniels' game plan to kind of keep Jeffrey Simmons and Danico Autry off this guy's back?
Well, that will be a major part of it. You know, and the thing is, because their defense has been playing so well, they have not been in games where they've been forced to throw the ball, Buck. See, that's the other interesting thing. That's why rookie quarterbacks very much become a function of their team. Imagine if Mac Jones was on a team on Jacksonville and he had to drop back 35, 40 times a game. I'm not saying he'd be a bad player, but we would just see different things.
Right.
He's on a team now where he does not have to do that. So I guess to answer your question, that's what's going to happen, because unless some fluky things happen and all of a sudden Tennessee's ahead 14-0, Tennessee's not likely to score a lot of points offensively in this game. So the Patriots will not have to throw the ball a whole lot. They'll run the ball. They'll have some, they'll do some interesting things. They, you know, you could see orbit reverses. You could see jet sweeps. Yeah, you could see a halfback pass. You could see those kinds of things. But Mac Jones is not going to have to drop back 35 times by choice in this game. And that's helped him a lot. They've been able to be very proactive with what they call. And that's a key, because when it's third and nine, or, you know, third and long yardage, you can't be that proactive with your pass game concepts. You're more at the mercy of the defense. The defense has the tactical advantage in long yardage. And the Patriots are not involved in a lot of those situations.
Yeah, at that point, they can just get in a track stance and come after the quarterback. The AFC as a whole, Greg, it's gotten a lot messier since last we met, with
yes.
Colts getting above 500. The Bills are losers of two of their last three. What the Colts are doing, Jonathan, as we talked about, Mac Jones getting a lot of attention for what the Patriots are doing. Jonathan Taylor is getting the bulk of the attention for what the Colts are doing. But I'm looking at these holes. I'm watching this game back on the condensed version today, Greg, and he is running through wide open lanes. How much better is this Colts rushing attack right now because the line's healthy?
Yeah, well, their run game's becoming more multiple. You know, this past week against the Bills, they did a really good job attacking the Bills' foundational over front defense. And by over front, I mean that the defensive line has shifted to the strength of the offensive formation, meaning to the tight end side. And the Bills are an over front defense. And every defense has obviously principles and concepts. And the Colts used what we call the wham trap concept. They used it three or four times. It was very effective. It's a really effective run game concept against four-man D lines that like to penetrate. One gap penetration, it's very good against that. But clearly the run game has become the foundation of their offense. Carson Wentz made a number of good throws this week, but he did not have to throw it very much. He only had 20 pass attempts, made a couple of really good third down throws, but he did not have to throw it very much at all.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like we talked about last week with Jimmy Garoppolo and what the 49ers game plan was against the Rams. They were able to run it with such efficiency that the quarterback isn't having to do a whole lot of heavy lifting and didn't need to for them to be able to be successful.
No, that won't happen every game.
Sure.
Obviously, they play the Bucs this week at home in a big game. And again, every game is different, so I'm not going to sit here and say exactly how it will play out. But it's not likely that the Bucs will score 10 points. So they more than likely will have to throw the ball more than the 20 times that Wentz threw it last week. But he's played well. They've had a very good play-action pass game, both with Wentz under center and Wentz in the gun. So they've had a pretty efficient pass game. Wentz is not turning it over. He's not throwing interceptions, and he's not getting sacked. You know, when you avoid the negative plays, you can live with an awful lot of things, and they're avoiding negative plays right now.
Yeah, it's made all the difference in the world. With the Bills, Greg, I'm not going to ask you if you're surprised by what's happening to them in the last couple of weeks, because I know the tape doesn't often lead to surprises, but what's kind of happening with Buffalo to where they've been going through these struggles?
Well, I think there's a couple issues with Buffalo. They don't really have a viable run game, Buck.
Right.
They're not committed to it. They don't really do it very much. They've tried in the last 2 weeks to change up their approach. They've played more, a little bit more with Allen under center. It was very effective against the Jets. I know people will say it's the Jets. It was very effective against the Jets.
Not here. They're not saying it's the Jets. I bet you.
Right. No, that's good
they're
point.
Not saying that here.
Good point. It may have been effective against the Colts, but they all of a sudden got down 14-0, and I think they stepped away from it because they have been playing more out of base personnel. They played with a fullback. They put Allen under center, but then they got away from it this past week. So the point is they don't really have a viable run game. Secondly, their offensive line is not a great pass-protecting O-line. Mm-hmm. So when you throw as much as they do, your O-line really gets pressured a lot. You know, as I told you last week and earlier in our conversation today, when you have weaknesses, they can crop up. And the last part of that is they're not creating and orchestrating explosive plays in the pass game, so their offense stagnates. It's very difficult to execute a sustaining offense with only one dimension, the pass. Very difficult. So you either have to get explosive pass plays or you need to be able to run the ball. So their offense has stalled a bit because there's no big plays and there's no balance to it whatsoever.
Yeah. It's something that Brian Daboll and his staff are going to have to...
They're going to have to figure that out.
Get to work on as the playoffs get closer and closer.
You know what the result is? Here's the result. The result is, and I'm not sitting here telling you Josh Allen's playing great football, but the result when all these things happen or in that approach is you're basically saying to your quarterback, you have to be great on every play in every game or we can't win. And that's a hard deal for the quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. Speaking of weaknesses that can crop up at any moment, I mean, the Chiefs defense was a weakness for quite some time, and now they're playing exceptional football. I was just watching the replay on NFL Network of that Chiefs-Dallas game, Greg, and I understand that they're getting healthier up front, and that's contributing a big part of this, but what is there anything noticeably that's changed with how Steve Spagnuolo is orchestrating this thing, or is it just the fact that they've got their pieces back?
You know, to me, and again, I'm sure there's tweaks that I don't know about.
Sure.
But I think overall, they're doing a lot of the same things defensively that they have been doing, that they did last year. Now, I think there's changes a little bit in the frequency with which they do certain things. I think they've played a little more cover two than they have, although cover two is a significant part of what they do, but I think they've played a little more of it. But for the most part, they kind of do what they do. They play cover two, they play cover one. There's some zero blitz thrown in. This is what Steve Spagnuolo does. You know, this is what they feature. So I think that they're doing predominantly the same things conceptually, just maybe changing the amount of which they do certain things. And then when specific players play at a high level, this week, Chris Jones was a dominant player.
So good.
Particularly when he played at D tackle. And I think they started him off in the first half playing snaps at both D end and D tackle. And as the game progressed, they clearly said, you know what? He's doing more damage at D tackle. Let's keep him in there. And he was dominant against the left guard McGovern and even had some really good snaps against right guard Zach Martin, who's obviously one of the better guards in the league. So to me, you know, without sitting here and spending a whole day just looking at the Chiefs D, I don't feel like they're that different in terms of what they do. They're doing it better.
Yeah. It's bad news for the rest of the conference, man. I turned around all of a sudden after seeing them get smacked around here in Nashville. They're 7-4 and rolling, as Mahomes has kind of figured out how, or not figured out, but is more willing, it seems, to take what the defense is giving him on the other side of things rather than make the spectacular play that we're accustomed to seeing from him.
Yeah. And I think that's critical too. I think they have to gradually work him back to playing within the structure in taking the throws that are there, moving the chains, adding a little run game into the mix. And then the big plays come, Buck. You know, the big plays, you can't force the big plays. You either have to try to orchestrate them or they just come in the natural course of running your offense. And I think that, you know, people are still saying, well, this Chiefs offense is still not very good. Well, I think they're working their way back to playing the right way, and it will become better as the season progresses.
Yeah, it may not be very good. It may not be great, but it's good enough to cause you problems at this point. And when the margin for error is that thin at this point of the season, we all know that that's all that it takes.
I mean, the parity this year is ridiculous.
I love it. It's weird. Yeah. It drives me crazy because I don't know who's actually that much better than the other teams that they're playing, but it's so much fun.
Well, the great thing about it, and again, obviously in Nashville, they don't love it, but anybody then can win on any Sunday. So you get, you know, the Texans beating the Titans, you get the Jaguars beating the Bills, you get these kinds of games and you just never know.
Yeah. Mike Vrabel likes to show his players a video clip of a horse race. And basically to illustrate at this point in the season, just how much closer things are than you actually want to believe that they are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the I guess the side view mirrors in cars, you know, objects are closer than they appear, you know.
Yeah, except you don't want that object to be Chris Jones jumping on your back for a sack, like what happened to Dak Prescott. Greg, what's coming up on the NFL matchup show this weekend?
Well, you know, there's obviously big games this week, and Tampa Bay at Indy is a very big game, and a game I'm sure they'll be watching as well in Nashville.
Sure.
Rams at Packers. I know that's not in the AFC, but that is a huge, huge game. So I'm really curious. Obviously, Tennessee at New England, I mean, that's as big a game as well. I mean, that and because, you know, obviously we can't do Thanksgiving because our show airs over the weekend. We'll have the results of Buffalo. We'll know how they did. And that's a huge game for them. They're at New Orleans tomorrow night, obviously not in our show, but you know, Buffalo, New Orleans on Thanksgiving night is a very big game in the AFC, because, hey, let's say Buffalo doesn't win the division. All of a sudden, Tennessee and Buffalo could be fighting for a wild card, and Tennessee beat Buffalo.
Yeah. I mean, that's all it takes. It's going to be spicy this weekend. Greg, have a great Thanksgiving. I know you're going to be hard at work. I know that the NFL does not stop for turkey dinner, but enjoy what time you can, and it's always a pleasure to hang out, buddy. We'll talk to you. Well, we won't talk to you next week because I'll be in Egypt. But
that would be a little tough, I guess, then.
I mean, it could, but I don't necessarily know how I feel about going to the Middle East with microphones and things like that.
Right.
And trying to come back. Idea. I love my people, Greg, but I don't know how receptive they're going to be
right
to that at this point. It's always a pleasure, buddy.
All right, Buck. Thanks.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.